Jeffrey and Joshua are right. Love is never wrong. And we know that there are a lot of Wilkinses with wonderful voices, some speaking voices like Frank and some singing voices like Jeffrey and Joe and the next generation, Eli and Joshua. One of the great joys of being around Frank, I've always found, was to see the effect he had on young people. One of them was a delightful young teacher at Culver City High School a few years ago who invited Frank to speak to her classes, and he had quite a gig at Culver City High School, as I remember. I decided that if we all had teachers, if we all had history teachers like this young woman, the revolution would be won by now. Our next speaker is Andrea McAvoy.
Good afternoon. Well, right after I met Frank, I invited him to speak to my students. You know, what better speaker could you have? Frank accepted generously, and he agreed to come speak to my U.S. history classes. He had a number of conditions, though. They had to be well prepared. He gave me a documentary, a number of articles, a list of terms, dates, people. So I talked, and we covered all of it. As the day approached, the excitement was building. You know, the students are so excited. There's nothing better than telling high school students you have someone who the FBI was chasing, and 132,000 pages, and went to the Supreme Court, right? And all these students are so excited. Secretly, I was getting a little worried. This was only a few years ago, and Frank was in his late 80s. And people had mentioned a little bit about the hearing, and this and that. It was 90 16-year-old students with an attention span as long as a music video. So I was getting just a little bit nervous. The day came, and Frank won them over the moment he began, and they were truly mesmerized. He began his story in the 1920s in Los Angeles, and we ended up in Europe, and then in the Holy Land, and then we were back in Los Angeles in the 40s and the 50s, and it went on and on, you know, and as a teacher, I'm making sure they're paying attention, and doing all this, and they were on the edge of their seat. They loved him. And he taught them about what fear can do to a country, and they really listened. He taught them so much. And when he got to the point about the Fifth Amendment and the First Amendment, he was so clear. And what he told them was that in taking the Fifth, you have the right to remain silent, to protect yourself. But in taking the First, you're taking a stand for yourself and also for others. So he covered constitutional law, the history of Europe and the Holy Land, the history of Los Angeles, the history of this country, and he did all in a couple hours. After his lecture, we hosted a lunch for Frank at my high school, and we headed out in the quad, and it was a beautiful sunny day, and there was grass, and we had this big long table, and the students were arguing over who was going to sit next to Frank, and the lecture really continued over lunch. And the students asked him questions and laughed at his jokes. And the important thing to note here is that Frank asked them questions. And he really listened to them. And he wanted to know about their struggles and their issues and what were they concerned about. And they could feel that he was really listening to them. And I think that was really incredible. The generation gap definitely had melted away. And there was no difference really between Frank and these 16-year-olds. After that day, a number of my students wrote research papers about Frank. He granted all of them personal interviews at the house with Donna and the dogs. And he edited their papers very closely, grammar and spelling. He would know know when they had made a mistake, but still, they loved it. They loved him. We went as a class to see Culture Clash's Chavez Ravine, which was fantastic, and the students cheered and were part of the standing ovation. Frank really took over the semester. I have to admit that we never made it to Reaganomics. And they had a portrait of Frank in the library and this essay by my student, along with other heroes from Los Angeles. The next year, he came back to another group of students, and I am not joking when I tell you he went even better than the year before. And he just had a passion for it, and again, they really loved him. At the end of the school year, I always ask my students, you know, what is it that you learned this year? What was important to you? And for both those years that Frank came to speak to my students, they talked about him. And one student said it, I think, most succinctly. He said, "I learned that you have the right to remain silent, but it's better to stand up and speak out for justice."
His advanced man par excellence for the whole state of Oklahoma and law-related education there was our next speaker, his wonderful friend, Michael Reggio.
Oklahoma, if you can't tell by my accent, yes, I am from Oklahoma. I'd like to talk a little bit about a different period in Frank's life. I met Frank in the mid-1980s at a conference out in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, and I told him right then and there that people in Oklahoma, and especially kids, needed to hear his message and his story, and somehow, someway, this had to happen, and it did happen. I was able to bring Frank Wilkinson into Oklahoma over 40 times. During that time, he became Oklahoma's second son, and he came to be known as a modern American hero. He gave his message to stand up for civil rights to thousands of people, kids as well as adults. He spoke to governors of Oklahoma. I had him in front of Supreme Court justices. He was at public forums, educational conferences, teacher institutes, universities, high schools, junior highs, middle schools, and even elementary schools. Frank would come into Oklahoma and say, "Who are we speaking to this time?" And I'd say, "Frank, second graders." And he'd look at me like, "We can't do this." But we could, and he could. Sometimes when he came to Oklahoma, we hopped in the car and crisscrossed across the state. We logged thousands of miles. One day, our days often ran from 4 o'clock in the morning to after midnight. One day we might drive to far western Oklahoma in the panhandle a few miles from Colorado. And the next day we might be down in the alligator swamp infested southeastern part of the state near Arkansas, Texas. Yes, we do have alligators there. While it was often hard, I loved these drives spent in personal conversation with Frank, and typical of his life, nothing deterred him. Once in eastern Oklahoma after an ice storm, we continually were having to drive off the road to get around fallen trees and debris. Frank's response, let's just keep going. He always pushed us forward, never wanting to stop, except when he wanted a Hershey's chocolate bar. He loved those Hershey chocolate bars, and I knew if I bought him a Hershey chocolate bar, he was good for another 300 miles. And wherever he went, it was always, always standing ovations. He spoke at hundreds of public schools. When I sent out notices he were coming, teachers used to fight over the privilege of his coming to their school. I would cluster schools together, and we would go from town to town and school to school. He spoke at all levels, from universities to elementary schools. As I said a while ago, he spoke as low as second grade. We would often sit for hours the night before or the day he first came and talk about the most effective ways to reach kids and have an impact on them. And Frank was one of the hardest workers I ever saw in his attempts to perfect his techniques with the young. Before he spoke, he was always nervous, but he shouldn't have been because he was always extremely effective. Kids walked away saying that they needed to protect their rights. They truly began to understand the importance of the First Amendment. And to this day, they do not forget. Tessa, I know you're Frank's grandchild and you're a kindergarten teacher. I want you to hear this story. My wife, Carol, sitting right here, called a teacher in western Oklahoma 2 nights ago and told her of Frank's passing. Joey, her eighth grade son, was there. He had heard Frank as a kindergartner. He said sadly, I'm going to miss Frank. He still remembers like thousands of others. They're different today. They're better today because of their memories of Frank. Frank attended more than 25 teacher institutes. He would come out a couple of days early and live in the same dorm as the participants. Every evening he held what I call fireside chats. By the time he left, he had become more than a speaker from Los Angeles. He had become a friend and had been adopted into a member of a caring family. Teachers returned to their classrooms and passed Frank's message to a new generation. A student in Ponca City, after hearing his teacher, entered an essay contest, which he won, writing about Frank. He called Frank on the phone just to learn more about him. Frank loved working with kids, and he knew how important was his message to them. One time we were in Oklahoma, NBC Today was filming us there. And right after the filming, some of the people there wanted to ask him some questions. Some people from NBC wanted to ask him some questions, and I couldn't find him. I ran all over the place looking at him. Where was he? Finally, I found him. He was off in a corner, just him and some students talking about the First Amendment. His impact was immense. He was greatly loved in Oklahoma. Frosty Troy, the Pulitzer-nominated newspaper editor of the Oklahoma Observer, said that when he heard of Frank's passing, tears came into his eyes. When I told the former Chief Justice of Oklahoma, of the Oklahoma Supreme Court, he said, "A great man is gone." Well, Frank will be missed, but this new generation of Oklahomans will never forget him and what he taught them.